Christmas time, 1974. Paul Allen skims the newest issue of Popular Electronics at a newsstand in Harvard Square. On the magazine's cover is a photo of the world's first personal computer, the Altair 8800. It's a simple gray metal box trimmed in blue with rows of switches and small red lights. Allen reads the headline, "World's first mini computer kit to rival commercial models."
Oh no, we can't miss out on this.
Allen pays for the magazine and charges through the slush toward the dorm room of his childhood friend, 19-year-old Bill Gates, a Harvard sophomore and fellow computer savant. Allen's so good at programming, he dropped out of college back in Washington State to work for a company called Honeywell in Boston. He barges into Gates' room.
Hey, Bill, this thing is happening without us.
What thing?
Allen hands him the magazine. Gates reads the article, rocking back and forth as he does whenever he's lost in thought. Allen paces. Gates finishes and tosses the article on the desk in front of him.
The article says they don't have an operating system for the Altair yet. Right now, it's just a hunk of metal.
I bet people are still buying it, though, because it's small and affordable. It's the first real home computer, man.
But it's basically useless. Think of all the switches you'd have to flip to get it to perform even the simplest task. Which means there's still time for us.
I know, but this is a breakthrough machine, Bill. We have to move fast. We gotta be the ones to make the first personal computer software.
I guess I see where you're going with this. I agree. Someone's going to make history here, and I know you're right. No one's going to remember who comes in second.
They draft a letter to the company that produces the Altair, Micro Instrumentation Telemetry Systems, better known as MITS. Gates is right. Though the Altair is generating tremendous buzz, it's pretty much useless without an operating system. Gates takes a crack at the letter.
Okay, how does this sound? Dear MITS directors, we are writing to inform you we've written the code for an operating system for the Altair.
They're bluffing. Neither has coded a single line yet. But if MITS is interested, Gates and Allen will figure it out. Gates anxiously checks the mail for the next 2 weeks. No letter and no call. Turns out that in their excitement, they left the wrong phone number on their letterhead. But they haven't figured that out yet. Gates tires of waiting.
Let's call them. You're 2 years older. You do it. No, you do it. You're better at this kind of thing.
So, Gates calls and pretends to be Allen. If he can convince MITS to give him a chance, then Allen will be the one to fly to the company headquarters in Albuquerque. At least Allen has a threadbare beard. Gates, reed thin with a freckled baby face, looks like a high school sophomore. Gates gets through to MITS founder Ed Roberts.
My name is Paul Allen. My team's based in Boston. We're almost finished with an operating system for the Altair, and we'd like to show it to you.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of these calls. Tell you what, the first person to walk through my door in Albuquerque with a working operating system gets the contract. How about that?
Gates hangs up. He turns to Allen.
We gotta get going.
They code day and night. Gates pushes aside classes and homework. They have one shot at this. Failure is not an option.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In the last episode, software designer Mark Andreessen liberated the internet from dull lines of text with his browser Netscape, allowing users to jazz up web pages with visuals. And they responded jubilantly. The number of users and pages online explodes. Netscape won't have a monopoly for long, however. At this moment, Microsoft is barely a glimmer in the eyes of Allen and Gates. The head-to-head browser wars are still years away. But Gates and Allen have no inkling they're about to launch a $1 trillion personal computer industry that will set a revolution in motion. And one day, a plucky startup called Netscape will be in their crosshairs. This is Episode 3, Poker Face. Gates has just hung up the phone with MITS founder Ed Roberts. But before they get any further, Allen points out one big problem. They don't have access to an Altair to test their code.
Even if we could buy an Altair and it's $400, it wouldn't get here in time for us to beat the competition.
What if we make a computer simulation of the Altair by reading the manual?
I guess that could work.
Gates scrawls code in the computer programming language known as BASIC. He works as if in a trance, rocking back and forth in his seat. When something crystallizes, he jots down code on the stack of yellow legal pads, his fingers stained from felt-tip pens in a rainbow of colors. He's worked this way since he was a teenager, when Gates spent nights at the computer lab at the University of Washington. There he codes his first computer program, a version of tic-tac-toe played against a computer. Once his high school recognizes his talents for computer programming, they ask Gates to write a scheduling program, which he secretly alters to ensure he's placed in classes with, in his words, a disproportionate number of interesting girls. By the time he's 17, he starts a business with Allen, writing a code to follow traffic patterns in Seattle. And he sells his first payroll program to a company for $4,200. He's a young man in a hurry. He just doesn't know where he's going. At Harvard, Gates majors in applied math but skips lectures and required courses so he can audit other classes he finds interesting. He hosts regular poker games in his dorm room, sometimes winning but more often losing hundreds of dollars a night. In the process, though, he learns how to bluff, a skill that will come in handy later. Behind his Coke bottle glasses and baby face hides a devilishly keen mind. He dazzles friends and classmates with his vision. He tells them in the future, everyone will own a computer that will give them access to a vast universe of knowledge. Now, he and Allen spend all of their time in the gray New England winter, cooped up in the library, pounding out code for the Altair. As the sun's starting to rise one morning, Allen finds Gates asleep at the computer terminal in the middle of a line of code, his head leaning forward until his nose touches the keyboard.
Bill, you're just going to wing it on your exams, aren't you?
No time to study. We got so much to do, and we've got to squeeze our operating system into 4 kilobytes so it'll work on the Altair.
By comparison, today's smartphones have millions of times the memory. After 8 weeks, they whittle their operating system down to 3.2 kilobytes. A couple of weeks later, the two sit in the library at the school's mainframe computer, about the size of a dishwasher. The winter sky outside is pitch black. It's possible another team has beaten them to the punch. But Gates is feeling hopeful.
That should do it. I think the code is solid. We must have forgotten something. I just don't know what.
Tell me now or forever hold your peace. Oh, I'm just probably being neurotic. Probably.
Gates hits a few keys and the mainframe spits out the final code on a punch tape, a strip of paper with a pattern of holes that represent commands for the computer program. Alan takes the tape gingerly, theatrically, and packs it away for his trip to Albuquerque. Alan settles into his seat on his flight. He goes over his pitch, mentally prepping himself for the demo. Suddenly, he realizes what's bothering him. They forgot to write a loader, the code that tells the computer this is software. Without it, their code for the operating system is junk, just random data. It won't work. There's no time for berating himself. Alan snaps the seat tray table down and hunches over it. On a yellow legal pad, he scribbles the loader code from memory, finishing just before the plane's wheels hit the desert tarmac. He doesn't have a way to test it. Alan will walk into the Albuquerque offices of MITS with no idea whether the program will run or not. MITS CEO Ed Roberts is waiting for Alan at the airport in his pickup truck.
Welcome to Albuquerque, Paul.
As Roberts drives him to a hotel, he sneaks side glances at the young Alan. He thinks,
"Geez, I own jeans that are older than this kid."
Alan is looking out the window, watching agave plants and cactuses whip by as they speed through the hills. A spine of mountains looms to the east of the city. Dust is everywhere. Alan tries to hide his fidgeting and nervousness.
"It's good to be here. I think you're going to like this demonstration."
"Well, you're the first to deliver. If you and your partner did what you said you could do, there'll be a lot of happy Altair users, I'll tell you that. Not to mention a lot of happy Altair programmers. But let's save the business talk for tomorrow. How about that? Here's your hotel."
They both get out of the pickup and head into the lobby.
"Wow. This sure is nice."
In fact, it's the nicest hotel in town. When Alan tries to check in, he realizes he doesn't have enough money to cover the room. He turns to Ed Roberts.
Mr. Roberts, I don't think I brought enough cash with me."
"Use a credit card."
"Well, what? I don't have a credit card, sir."
"All right, I'll cover the room."
The following morning at MITS headquarters, Roberts and Alan stop at a desk displaying the Altair 8800. The Altair is spare, and in Alan's eyes, beautiful. This is the first time he's seen one in person. He plays it cool.
"Yeah, this should work just fine."
Alan toggles the switches, then waits 10 minutes for the tape reader to load the code. Roberts doesn't know what to make of this youngster. Given he couldn't even cover one night's hotel stay, Roberts doesn't hold out much hope the code will actually work. He leans back on the next desk, arms folded, and watches Alan, who looks nervous. Alan taps some keys, and the computer makes a couple of beeps. He holds his breath. A few feet away from the Altair and connected by a cord, the teletype, a kind of electronic typewriter that processes commands from the Altair, just lies there, silent. There's an uncomfortable pause. Alan studies the front panel on the Altair computer, then toggles a few switches back and forth. Still, nothing. Roberts is losing faith by the second. Finally, Alan checks the connection on the teletype machine. He jiggles the cord, and suddenly, it clacks to life.
"Hey, it typed something."
No one is more surprised than Alan, who gathers himself enough to yank a piece of paper coming out of the teletype machine. Alan reads from the paper.
"It's asking for memory size."
He types an answer. The amount of memory space Gates and his program will need to run on the Altair, which is 4 kilobytes. The Altair responds, "Okay." Alan inhales sharply. He types, "Print 2+2. The simplest of questions. But it will test not only his and Gates' coding, but also the system's mathematical capabilities. Out spits Altair's answer from the teletype machine. 4.
"Oh my God, it printed 4.
I knew it would work.
It would be hard to say who is more excited at this moment, Roberts or Allen. Roberts' company was on the brink of collapse. He took it further into debt on the wild bet he could create a computer that a home hobbyist could use and afford. He banked on someone else creating the operating system. Roberts and Allen are witnesses to history being made. For the first time, a software program runs on a commercially viable home computer. Roberts brings Allen into his office and agrees to license their operating system. Roberts writes a contract that gives Gates and Allen a 10% royalty for every copy of Altair Basic that is sold with the Altair, up to a cap of $150,000. Once that threshold is reached, the version of Basic that Gates and Allen created will belong to MITS. Roberts thinks he's gotten the best of these two naïfs. Allen returns to his hotel, which doesn't seem quite so expensive anymore. He calls Gates.
We're in business. It worked. Get the next flight out to Albuquerque. Get the next one you can.
Owning the operating system will give Roberts the edge to control the market for personal computers. Roberts is ecstatic. But before long, the thrill will be gone. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. July 22, 1975, Albuquerque. Bill Gates and Paul Allen are gathered in Ed Roberts' office. They can hardly contain their excitement. They're about to sign a contract with Roberts' company to license their software, the first personal computer software ever created. Roberts goes over the terms one more time.
As it states here, you'll receive royalties for each copy of BASIC sold, and a little money up front. And MITS will get an exclusive worldwide license to the program for 10 years and exclusive rights to sublicense the program to others.
But before he signs, Gates wants to be crystal clear about the agreement.
And MITS agrees to use its best efforts to license, promote, and commercialize our program, right?
Roberts nods. The deal is done. But the piece that Gates has flagged, that MITS will do its best to market their software, will come back to haunt Roberts. For now, Gates has taken a leave of absence from Harvard, and he and Allen have taken up residence at a hotel across the street from MITS. There, they mull their near future.
Now, technically, we may be MITS employees, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't start our own company within the company.
Then we can keep developing our version of the basic software.
Yeah, but we need a name.
Yeah, yes. Something that sounds cool but reflects what we're doing. Something that combines computers and software.
Not just computers, microcomputers, Bill.
You're right.
Like Microsoft. Microsoft. Microsoft.
That's it. Let's register it.
Which they do, with a hyphen between micro and soft. Eventually, they'll jettison the hyphen, and the world will recognize Microsoft as one word. Once the contract is signed, MITS bundles the basic software with its computer hardware sales. Customers who purchase the computer can buy Altair Basic for only $75. The standalone price is $500. For Gates and Allen, this is an early introduction to the power of bundling as a way to popularize a program. They still want to maximize profit, of course, but they learned that grabbing a hold of market share is essential to building a lasting business. After buying the Altair and Basic add-on, though, many hobbyists simply copy the software and hand it out to their friends for free. When that happens, neither MITS nor Microsoft receives a penny. Gates senses that Microsoft's revenue stream will suffer from this arrangement, so he begins licensing the operating system to other personal computer companies. Roberts, who is also suffering from pirated software disks, is incensed. He confronts the boy genius.
Bill, I understand that you've been licensing BASIC out to companies other than Altair.
As a matter of fact, I have.
That's not part of our arrangement. We have exclusive rights.
That arrangement isn't working very well for Microsoft. It seems mostly like our deal ensures that we sell fewer copies at a lower price, and then those copies get passed around for free. And you know something? That's not really the model Microsoft wants to follow.
Be that as it may, Bill, that's the model Microsoft is contractually obligated to follow.
That's a junk contract then. Microsoft isn't going to let itself be bled dry.
Bill, get this straight. You and Paul are employees here. By selling off rights to our competitors, you're going to put MITS out of business.
We just want to make sure we have as much flexibility as possible, Ed.
Boyish looks aside, Gates can be ruthless. In 1977, the two companies go into arbitration to settle their dispute. Roberts states his case first.
Bill Gates and Paul Allen are my employees, and they are selling BASIC to our competitors in violation of our contract. And I wrote the contract myself, so I should know what it says.
Gates was expecting this.
The contract that Mr. Roberts refers to also obligates MITS to market our software with their best efforts. Clearly, they have not done that. If they had, why have we been able to sign up so many licensees on our own? How many licenses has he lined up? Let me count them for you. Why, none.
Why, you smug, pimply-faced kid. This is all a game to you, isn't it? Business, the courtroom, life. I honestly don't know if I should spank you or fire you.
Gates' argument carries the day. After winning an arbitration, Gates and Allen are free to license their software to whomever they want. They move back to Seattle along with another Harvard classmate, the brash and voluble Steve Ballmer, who becomes their head of marketing. In 1981, the company licenses its operating system to run on IBM's new personal computers, which turns both companies into juggernauts. Microsoft then licenses the software to other companies as well, and the cash comes flowing in. 4 years later, Microsoft releases the operating system Windows. It includes a graphical point-and-click interface that replaces the old text commands users had to type into MS-DOS, an operating system Microsoft developed for the new generation of personal computers. The following year, at the age of 31, Bill Gates becomes a billionaire. Within a decade, Windows catapults Microsoft into position as the world's leading personal computer software company. Power and profit follow. And when Bill Gates turns 40,
He is named the richest man in the world. But the landscape is not clear for Gates. Netscape launches its browser, called the Navigator, in 1995. By this time, Microsoft has revenues of nearly $6 billion and employs 17,000 people worldwide. The company sees an opportunity. They're already in so many homes, they seem ubiquitous. What if they cut out the middleman and make the browser themselves? Who'll stop them? Next time on Business Wars, Microsoft releases a competing browser to Netscape's, which leads to a showdown at Netscape's headquarters, one that Andreessen likens to a visit by Don Corleone. He half expects to find a bloody computer monitor in his bed the next morning. To combat the Microsoft threat, Netscape gets big, fast, and the digital titans go to war. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is Business Wars. A quick note about the conversations that you've been hearing. We can't know exactly what was said, but this dialogue is based on our best research. I'm your host, David Brown. Adam Pennenberg wrote this story, edited by Emily Frost. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Jenny Lauer is our producer. Sound designed by Bay Area Sound. Our executive producer is Marshall Louie, created by Hernan Lopez. For Wondery.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.